Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Carl Esprey, CEO of Contango Holdings. Welcome back again, Carl. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Phil, how are you?
Yeah, spot on, thanks. It's good to see you again, to be honest.
Yeah, very good to see you too.
I guess things have been progressing quite well in terms of the movements in the SP. But do you want to, for potential investors, give us an overview of what Contango Holdings is all about, please?
Yeah, of course. If we look back historically, Contango Holdings was started as a vehicle to look for near-term production assets across the commodity space. We first looked at a large coal asset in Zimbabwe called the Lubu asset, which we purchased maybe 2 years ago, or certainly pre-COVID, or maybe during COVID at least. And subsequently, we bought a small, well, what we thought was a small gold asset in Mali that we thought we could bring into production quite quickly. It turned out that, firstly, just by pure fluke, I guess, that the gold asset in Mali was much larger, or at least appears to be much larger than we thought it would be. And so that kind of changed the focus from a near-term production asset to something that we needed to understand a bit more and had to do a bit more exploration around. Really our sweet spot, but anyway, good, something, it's a good problem to have. And then in the meantime, the coal price has the coking coal price, because our asset is both a thermal and a coking coal asset in Zimbabwe. But the coking coal price has gone absolutely crazy, and it's gone up maybe 300% in the months since we bought the asset. And so yet again, we looked at we had to change from targeting both thermal coal and coking coal to having a very targeted look at our coking coal fractions within the larger resource in Lubu. And then more importantly, looking at the coke price and looking at how we could take that coking coal and turn it into coke, because the coke is obviously the end product of coking coal used in the blast furnace for both the steel industry and the ferroalloys industry. The coke price has also gone crazy, and we want to be transporting as high value a product as possible. So we've also got some, we've had some strategic changes around what product we produce out of Zimbabwe.
The term coke battery is probably, for some of the listeners, is that they don't understand what it is. So it's to do with coke of the ovens, isn't it? Multiple ovens. Do you want to just talk us through the basic process of how those ovens work and what the actual byproduct?
And when I'm down in Zim, I'll take some videos and we can put it up, and maybe you can stick it up on a Twitter or something.
Yeah, for sure.
But basically, they take the high quality coke and coal, and they look at the purities, and everyone's got a different level of impurities. I mean, each producer. And they have this very long building that's got a series of, I guess, rectangular ovens, and they compact coal into them and they light it and it cooks for 24 hours. And they have one after the other, maybe 38 or 40 of these ovens stuck in a row.
Yep.
And a train comes along and they basically open the door and the metal thing pushes all the coal into this basket on the train.
Yep.
And then it takes it to the one side of the area and it just leaves it on the floor to cool down. And then it comes back and does the next one. Then they load them all, they clean them all out and they load them all again and they cook the coal. And I think when I was in Zimbabwe, I had the numbers, but I think each of those rectangular kind of ovens holds about 5 tons.
And the idea is that when you get the output from each one of those ovens, they are then charged into the blast furnace for the process for the production of the steel.
It's basically cooked coal, and it's very spongy, but it's also hard. So it holds. So it's high in carbon, and it's hard enough that it can hold the iron ore above it and get very hot when it's heated. So it generates the heat in the blast furnace, and then also.
It's almost like a compression technique to hold as much energy and temperature in that, almost like imagine it like a charcoal brick. The better quality the charcoal and the more dense it is when you put it on your barbecue, the longer it will burn and maintain that heat.
With the strength to hold the heavy iron ore above. Yeah, correct.
Wow.
There's all these caking indexes and coking indices that they look at to make sure that your coal turns into coke that they can use in their blast furnace.
Yeah.
And then basically the carbon transfers into the iron to then create the steel?
To liberate the steel.
I think there's probably a lot of people thinking they're actually batteries of some description. I mean, the battery is actually the terminology of the multiple ovens, really. That's what the battery is, really.
Yes, correct, like a chicken.
Yeah, exactly.
Battery as in chicken, not as in Tesla.
Yeah. Because there are multiple, there are different size ones, isn't there? Some are like 7 meters high, or what, you know. Yes. I see the different specs. When the one you're aiming is obviously we talked about two different scenarios, but what are you aiming for there? Is would that be a medium size one?
It's a good question. I don't have the answer. Let me ask my technical team. Certainly, I'd probably say it's on the smaller end of the Chinese ones, because I know that in the Chinese industry, they're shutting down all Coke producers that are smaller than 500,000 tons.
Yeah.
And in the African perspective, 500,000 tons would make you one of the biggest producers in the whole continent. So that's just, China's just so huge.
Yeah.
I would say we're probably on the smaller end of what China produces, but we're on the larger end of what's around in the world, ex-China.
So just recently, you provided an update relating to operations at the 100% owned Gorillo Nintiela gold project in Mali, where results from aeromagnetic studies have yielded multiple high-grade potential target zones. Do you want to talk us through this news?
Yes, absolutely. We originally bought the Gorillo deposit it was about 330,000 ounces of resource. It had been drilled out by the previous owners. Post looking at it, our geological team and the independent geologist that did our 43-101 believed that the data had been misinterpreted to the downside. So they thought that the resource was much larger, and they put a resource target of about 1.8 to 2 million ounces on the deposit. We then bought the neighboring deposit in Tiela because they also believed the resource extended into that property. So we were left, you know, as a company with limited resources, and as I said, a company that's been set up for near-term production with quite an interesting exploration asset. And exploration isn't really what we told the market we would do or wanted to do. So we started a process of exploration with our geological team. And then midway through, we've been approached by various players in the region, both international and domestic players, who are more suited to running an exploration process than we are. And so we put on pause our drill program to enter into discussions with some of them, because obviously anyone coming in is going to want to do their own drilling and want to decide where to put their own holes. So we're in the process of early stage discussions with a few parties in West Africa. And, you know, just to be clear, we would look at, in terms of the way we're framing any deal we would look at, would be a deal that allows us to, if we were to sell out a portion of the asset, it would be done at a significant premium for what we paid. It would limit the amount of capital that we'd have to continue funding into the project to almost nothing, but also give us upside to any gold that was found, either through equity or a royalty in the project.
And originally, this was something like a 300,000 ounce play, wasn't it? But you believe that it potentially could target resources up to what, 1.8 million to 2 million ounces of gold?
That's what the geological boffins tell me.
And as you say, if you can realise some of that, or there's some sort of farming or JV, then that could potentially fund the Lubu project, right?
Yeah, and at the very least, it means that the resources we have at the moment are concentrated on the Lubu project. And then because it may be that it takes a while for the new, assuming there's a deal done on Gorillo, maybe that it takes them a few years to firm up. The reason we never wanted to get into exploration is because it's a long lead time process. It might take years to do the full work around it. But we do want upside. If there's, for example, if there's 5 million ounces of gold found in Gorillo, then we want all that. We want all the upside. Well, not all of it. We want upside to that larger discovery. But we don't want to have to, use our limited resources as a company to be funding large exploration projects when we should rather be spending that money on Lubu.
Just talk us through how developed the project is there. I mean, has it been previously explored? Is how long would it take to get the infrastructure in place to start? How deep is the gold, do you think?
It's been previously drilled. So we bought it with a resource on it, and they've been drilling down on that resource. The gold, it's typical West African gold. So it's not deep. It starts at surface and then it goes down to about 100 meters. I think the deepest hole the previous owners drilled was 120 meters. And actually at 120 meters, there was still ore. So it could go deeper, but this isn't like a South African gold resource where you're going down 4 kilometers. This is, large disseminated West African gold. Yeah. Relatively low grade, 2-3 grams a ton, but extremely profitable gold.
And it's in quite a safe jurisdiction, right, in Mali?
Well, it's a jurisdiction. I mean, Mali's got its ups and downs, but in terms of the gold industry, there's such large players. I mean, Barrick Gold is there, IAM Gold, B2 Gold, all the big players are there. even AngloGold Ashanti's over there. And none of them have had any issues. I don't think anyone's really had any issues in the gold industry, but there's always political uncertainty.
Of course, Bamako has always been a bit of a hot area.
Yeah, yeah. I like it. I mean, I go there often. I'm there in 2 weeks' time. So it's not, you know, and I know Barrick Gold hosts its board meetings there occasionally as well, just to kind of show that it doesn't scare them either. It's really not as bad a place as everyone says.
Ideal world. I think on previous RNSs, you've invested about $1.5 million from this.
We bought it for about $1.5 million. We've probably invested another $500,000 in work.
Okay, so there's $2 million in at the minute. You're going to need a decent return on that $2 million up front. And then maybe some sort of, as you said, net smelter or shares, if you like, in terms of whoever takes the thing. And then that is going to be a liquid asset or an asset that either can be generated to produce Contango money going forward or as a lump sum, depending on how you do it. So that would be pretty efficient use of this whole thing, especially if you're not going to explore it yourself.
This is all subject to negotiation, obviously. What we would like, as you said, is a significant premium to what we paid. It's worth much more than we paid for it, so that has to be reflected. We definitely want, ideally we have a royalty because those royalties can last for years and you can actually sell the royalty. So a royalty for a producing mine is a liquid asset these days. You can sell it to royalty companies. And whether or not the equity will be liquid is, I guess, also a negotiation, but it's something, but also we don't want to be continuing to fund the whole time. So we do want to, we kind of want to get to a point where we have the upside, we've got the sale price, and then we don't have to fund any further commitments. Someone else can fund.
So moving on really to the main asset, which is the coal and ultimately coke and coal, met coal, whatever you want to call it. How do you see that progressing? Because, things look pretty exciting. The stuff's going to start coming out of the ground in a few weeks.
Yeah, so we've got, on site, there's lots of activity happening. We've got, all the areas are being cleared for some of the infrastructure that's arriving. But, as you said, we're going to start accessing the coal in the next few weeks. The coal initially will be stockpiled. So the coal will be produced by end of Q1. It'll initially be stockpiled. And then because even though the area for the wash plant's been cleared, the wash plant's still being installed. The wash plant will be installed at some point in Q2, and some of the coal can be sold as it is. Other parts of the coal will be washed, and then we'll have a product that we can sell. Whether we choose to sell it or whether we choose to wait in order to turn it into coke, because as we said earlier, we are looking at producing our own coke batteries on site, is something that we're pondering at the moment, because the coke price is so much higher than the coking coal price. And also because we now know, we've kind of announced to the market that we're going to be producing coke in Zimbabwe, that has limited somewhat some of the people that would have bought our coal previously to turn to coke now see us as competitors. So, the intention now is to install the coke batteries and the wash plant, all of which will be completed. I think the wash plant will be done by Q2. The coke batteries will be done this year sometime. And then we'll be producing about 40,000 tons of coke a year from our site.
You expect that initial coke plant will be 3,000 tons a month?
That's right.
Yeah, 3,000 tons a month. And that's going to produce EBITDA of about 600,000, we talked about, at the current margin, which is 200, but at $200 per ton. But actually, it's actually higher than that. But let's use 200 for the sake of argument. But I really want to talk about the longer term plan, which really, if you did 3,000 tons a month, it would be like scratching a little itch in this coal field, because this coal field is like huge.
Yeah, billions.
So, billions of tons of coal. So the coal plant needs to be what sort of stage, or the coking plant, what sort of size does
a Chinese coke module comes at 150,000 tons a year. That's the kind of minimum size of a module that you buy from China. And that is that's going to be phase two that we install at the site. That means we have to be mining about 400,000 tons a year of coal to feed that. And that's what we're designing the mine to produce in phase one. When I go to Zimbabwe in the next few weeks, I'll make sure to take some videos of what 150,000 ton coke plant looks like, because there's plenty Chinese in the area. There's at least three others in the area that produce that. Although none of them have their own coal. They all buy coal from the likes of us and other mines in the area. And that will produce EBITDA of about 40, in current prices, about $45 million a year. And if we assume $200 a ton margin, which is what we were speaking about earlier, the current margin is about $300. If we assume that coke falls by 100, then you're looking at $30 million a year of EBITDA from that site, from that plant.
Okay, and you obviously be still running the 3,000-ton plant as right. well. So
and then we'd start building the second 150 and the third 150. I mean, in the one Chinese producer in Zimbabwe is doing 1.2 million a year, to give you an example of scale. Yeah.
So this is really just an escalation of what can happen, if you like, in terms.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a limit of how much coke and coal that you can actually produce from a Zimbabwe point of view?
We're in discussions with the Zimbabwe government to get an entitlement for up to 400,000 tons of coke a year. Well, that's not up to, because we could still get more. As I told you, there's a Chinese producer of 1.2 million, but what we do want is a guarantee of up to 400,000 tons initially, which would make us one of the bigger coke producers, I mean, ex-China in the world, because that's roughly the size of the South African coke industry. And so I'm hoping that we can get that announcement, we can get that document as well from the Zimbabwean government in the next few weeks. That allows us to then, I mean, we have the resource to easily produce 400,000 tons of coke a year. Once we have the entitlement, the country entitlement for the environmental, then we have that's obviously government proof that we can produce that quantum of coke.
It rather stamps it from the government's point of view, anyway, which is great. So that would be 2/3 coking plants at 150,000 a piece.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and the EBITDA on that is phenomenal. Basically, it's going to be absolutely huge. So, what sort of mine length do you think with the coking coal is possible in that situation?
We've got hundreds of millions of tons of coking coal. So we've got. We don't have any issues with mining. All that will happen is we'll have to move on. We'll have multiple open pits and a few undergrounds to feed that. But we will not have all of that coke will come from our own coke and coal, our own resource.
Okay,
That's one of the big issues the Chinese producers of coke have. They've built these huge coke operations in Zimbabwe, and they don't have their own coke and coal, so they are having to buy from people in the area. And obviously they were very excited when we were starting up a mine that we'd be a new source of supply. And now they realize that we're going to compete with them on the coke. So that's made things a little bit more tense. But anyway, that's the nature of the beast when you're dealing with everyone trying to chase the highest value, the highest margin product.
Yeah, but initially maybe you don't even need to take the highest margin to create cash flow. But that will be something for once you start digging out of the ground, you can decide. From the point of view of you're saying, one plant creates how much EBITDA, you reckon? Between $30 and $45 million a year?
That's right. In today's prices, it's about $45 million. If coke cools off to where it was a few months ago, then we're talking $30 million. There's $200 of margin for coke.
We had this conversation actually in our podcast, Phil, didn't we, on Sunday? Because we were talking about met coal in terms of copper and gold, and we were talking about all the different assets that were basically there's not enough of them. It's as simple as that. So we're now in a world where there is a systematic flaw in the amount of metallurgical coal available compared to the amount of steel that needs to be produced.
Yeah.
So how do you see the coal price? I mean, I can't see the coal price suddenly going down, you know, drastically. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, and well, that's why I'm asking.
The issue with coal is there's very few pure coke and coal resources in the world. I mean, the ones that I know of are in, you know, Western Canada and parts of the US, the old Walter and the old Western. It's normally a mixture of thermal coal and coking coal. And you can target, and generally, if you've got a very small coking coal fraction, it's very expensive to not target the thermal coal. And so with this new kind of environmental thermal coal, environmental minded thermal coal is bad for the environment, people have shut down coal resources and they've shut down the thermal, ergo they've shut down the coking at the same time. And so the supply, there is very little supply response for new coking coal on the market at the moment because, you know, some large funds won't invest in it. Some governments get in trouble if they invest in it. And so I think it's a very sustainable price story, the coking coal price, because I do not see, I mean, BHP is talking about exiting, Rio Tinto is talking about exiting the coal space. So who's going to enter the coal space? And again, if the world decides to never use thermal coal again, which it may or may do, it looks like it's moving that way, we still need coking coal because you still need steel, you still need ferroalloys, you still need coking coal to make coke to go into the smelter. It's just the supply response, the lack of supply response into a good demand environment is why you've seen such a rapid increase into the in the coking coal price. I mean, it's ironic that the coking coal price looks like the lithium price, you know. The one's an electric vehicle metal and the other one's coal, but it's just because the one's a demand story, the other one's a supply story, I think.
Yeah, there is not enough supply, as you say.
I mean, it's the infrastructure thing, isn't it? You've got Biden with his $1 trillion infrastructure bill, so there's obviously more highways and bridges and steel needed, and it's driving everything.
Okay, so basically, just to round up in terms of this, if I'm envisaging this right, and I always try and look forward in terms of what we're talking about, sort of around 3 years from now, hopefully you will have three lots of coking batteries and maybe still the small one as well. If the current coal margin is there, you'll be talking about anything from $100 million to $150 million EBITDA from the company. We also have the gold and the fact that that will have an asset and possibly either shares that you're benefiting from in the company that's doing something like that, or a net smelter royalty, which will have an intrinsic value. And as the gold continues to come out or is, how can I put it, basically increased in the amount of coal gold that is there, that's going to have a greater value as time goes by. Would that be fair? Is that where you're aiming? Like 3 years from now, that would be
that's
a good situation?
Yeah.
Okay. So the long game is that. The short game is we get a small battery going by the end of this year.
Start mining and stockpiling in the next few weeks.
Yep.
Finished off some of the infrastructure around the site, specifically stuff that's needed for the coke battery. That will all get up and running this year. And then we're producing, with a small coke battery, we'll be producing $600,000 to $700,000 a month of EBITDA. And from that, and that's again, that's if the coal price falls, because we said it's higher if the coal price stays where it is. And then with that, we start the expansion immediately to 150,000 tons a year with $5 million.
Okay. And around the end of Q2, wash plant will be on site, installed, so that you can then wash the coal as well. If necessary, and if there is any offtake agreement, you can sell some of the coal, if possible. It's maybe not possible because of the way the Chinese have operated in this situation. But who knows? We don't know how desperate people will be for this coking coal. So we really don't know how desperate they're going to be for the met coal.
So obviously we'll keep our best coal for us. What's important is to keep the best coal for our own coke battery.
All sounds good. What do you think, Phil?
It sounds brilliant. Yeah, I mean, it's all gearing up, isn't it? And I can't wait to see some of those photos, videos of the, as you mentioned, of the battery, et cetera, and also how things are progressing on site there.
Well, I mean, I'll be down there in 4 weeks' time.
Yeah.
We can probably do a video from there if you want.
I think it'd be good, yeah. I think it'd be good to do a video and get it out there on Twitter, and also maybe do some sort of investor, meet the investors as well, Carl, because I think it's always always important to meet your retail investors.
Yeah, we could possibly do a live thing from Zimbabwe on Zoom with you at the plant, and then people can ask some questions about the coal. That will definitely be good as the coal starts to come out the ground. That'll be superb.
Carl Espray, CEO of Contango Holdings, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, guys.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.